Okay, we're going to continue now with our next talk. The theme for this evening is we're going to work with general concepts first, and I have to thank Rabbi Steinberg for an amazing presentation. This is the opening act. The next is also going to be a very general topic, and our speaker is no less distinguished. I will introduce him shortly. I just wish I had this topic when I was a medical student, and basically, Professor Dr. Gesundheit is going to be speaking to us on the topic of Jewish medical ethics in terms of a syllabus as a way of learning. I first met, now I'm going to get personal, Benny, when he came for round one of his training in Toronto when we were residents back in pediatrics at SickKids. And subsequently, over time, we've developed a very good relationship, and it's been a pleasure watching him as his career has taken off. He's extremely humble as well, so I've been told to shorten this as well. Studied in Yeshivat Har Etzion for, I won't tell you how many years, more than he wants to admit, right? Completed his pediatric training and came back to Toronto for a second round where he did his hematology, oncology fellowship, combined in his spare time with a medical ethics PhD, and then he went back to Israel, and his love is, of course, in Jewish medical ethics. He's also doing a little bit of dabbling on the side with some stem cell research, and he is the master of PowerPoint. And he's going to entertain us this evening with one of his many talks, and I look forward to it as well. So tonight we're going to hear about the syllabus of Jewish medical ethics and the new wave.
Good evening. Good morning, everybody. It's a real pleasure to be here. If we talk about the question of learning, I would like to go back to one of the Sufim in the Torah describing the Ahon HaKodesh, where the Torah is, and I think we have all the features of the conference in these few Sufim. It says there you should prepare the Ahon, where the Torah is, for the way to say, and it should be done so that you have sticks, and they should be there for transportation. But for the Ahon, whenever the Ahon stays at the place, you have to keep the sticks. You don't take them away. They're not just there for transportation. You have to leave them there forever. And Bob Hills and Mesh Kaufman and others ask the question, why do the sticks have to be always with the Ahon? Even you would go to transport them somewhere. And the answer is given very beautifully, that the sticks, the Ahon, should be always ready to go wherever it has to go. And I think that is the best source. Lo yasumu mimeno. The sticks have to be the whole time, that the Torah has to be in motion. Rabbi Jay Kalman, I would like to thank you, Dr. Friedman, for this wonderful organization of the conference and wonderful place. And I'm sure you had this pasuk in mind, but I know it is co-sponsored and co-organized by others, so I found the same source there as well. Sorry. It says that it has two kuvim, two of the angels, protecting them. And Chazal says the face of these two angels, they are faces of children. Because you have to keep, as the Sfat says, the children, they are protecting. These are the future of our Torah. Vasita Shnai Kuvim Kerabia, and that is the Yeshiva University Center for Jewish Future. If you think I couldn't find a connection to Jewish Orthodox Jewish union, it's just at the beginning. All the Sukkim say you should do and you should build, Moshe, but if it comes to the Ahon, it says the Asu Ahon of the Sukkim, you should do it all together. Meaning, we need the union of all of them together, the Asu, the Shalvavim. So it's just impressive to see how beautifully you put this conference together in a place called Mont-Tremblant. And that is, I have no doubt, that you have in mind that Mont-Tremblant is Midoraita, as it is defined at Har Sinai. The Har Sinai Hashem Kulo, when the Torah was given there, the Yeterat Kol Ha'am Ma'or, and the whole mountain was trembling. The way you organize that I think it's just self-evident how beautiful you did it, and a big shout out that I think in the name of all of us for putting that together in such a meaningful way. By having these hints, you actually invited to talk about the question, how does the Ahon HaKodesh and everything we just spoke about come to Jewish medical ethics? And I think that's a really interesting topic. There's a lot of literature about the Shuvot. Professor Steinberg presented nicely the richness of the fields, and that was really the beautiful encyclopedia. And now it comes to the question, how can you really teach it? And I had a question with Liz Friedman on the way here.
Thank you.
We had an interesting talk. You said that you have interests, you have a book here, you have a book here, you have a talk there, a shiur. But what is the system to learn? I don't think there is really a system that just to learn shas or the team. I would like to consider a way to make it compatible for normal human beings who cannot learn both shas, that we can have special focus during their training and to learn the major issues during the training and later on. Focus and get deeper into the shas. I would like to give you some ideas. I agree now. And I started to work on the website jewishmedicalethics.org and to prepare an online course. I would like to give you some of the rationale, what came in my mind, and what I'm planning to do, where I am now, and where I would like to be in the future. And more importantly, I would like to hear from you during the conference if there are ideas for collaboration and further ideas. William Osler emphasized very clearly that you have the need of growth, general education for physicians. If you are too focused just on the technicalities and you forget the human aspects, I think he thinks he missed an important point. Talking about the patient-physician relationship to understand the population, and of course many other issues related to that. There are many syllabus online. And there's actually an interesting website by the Institute of Ethics. They have more than 600 syllables ready there, a short description. And I wonder if it is time now to talk about the state of art in Jewish and ethics to prepare a systematic approach, literature, cases, and really to give a systematic curriculum for this interesting and very rich field. I trust it would be interesting not only for physicians, but also for rabbis. And actually, a general Jewish training to show the beauty of the Torah Chaim. You see many old sources, and they speak very modern language if we know how to interpret them. And that, I think that is a challenge, not only for physicians, much more than just for everybody who is interested in these studies. Thinking about the syllabus, I summarize it in this way, that we have at the beginning students from different backgrounds, and at the end we want to have physicians ready to treat patients. At the beginning they have like general studies, preclinical work, and I think that is the place for basic bioethics. I mentioned here three topics, so of course it can be much longer. What is the approach to medicine, the ethical commitment, the history, the legal aspects, the literature. When it comes to the clinical rotation, it would make sense that to have, during the same time, the rotation, to have the topics from lifespan from the beginning to the end, and this way to have all the rotations that are covered by ethical approaches as well. Later on, they go, students go for their expertise, their subspecialties. And that would be the place for personal interests to focus further on what they're interested in. That would make sense for medical training to have the ethics training in keeping with medical training. Of course, this part, A and B, is the core of the material of the topics. Professor Feinberg, and I mentioned here in your paper, Medical Ethics, Secular and Jewish Approaches, I think it is extremely interesting to combine these two worlds. The modern world, the secular bioethics, and classical Jewish from the source. To bring that together is an extremely challenging bridge, and it can go about both directions. I think rabbis could benefit very much to learn what's going on in research, in clinical work, and on the other hand, physicians very often ask questions. What are really the values of how long to treat and what are the principles? When I was when I trained, these were not the focus of the training. On this interesting bridge, there are many locations to study. You resources and to learn more children, more response and more material, and you can be more on this side, so it can really move back and forth. And I think it's a very interesting challenge and a confrontation between two worlds which are very interesting to learn from each other. The literature is rich. The systematic literature, I think the first one really to be mentioned, I put only three authors here. Boyce, who wrote 100 years ago, the big familiar magazine in German today. He gives a lot of material and sources, less the ethical aspects than the scientific and the sources where some of the different diseases are described. Most historical. Lord Yakubovich, rather Dr. Lord Immanuel Yakubovich, 50 years ago exactly, wrote his thesis on Jewish ethics, a comparative and historical study in Jewish religious ethics to medicine and practice. Translated into English from an English reader. Professor Spindler, with a tremendous encyclopedia and English Beatles, covered in many volumes and a lot of entries, lots of topics. I think if we have all this material, it's a question now how to take this material and to learn it. Not everybody is capable to read 7 volumes. And therefore the challenge is to prepare a short syllabus which gives an introduction, and during the training you get the tools to learn it later on. In the paper which you have also in the handouts, the syllabus for Jewish medical ethics in the context of general bioethics, I'd like to describe some ideas which I would like to share with you now. Kohelet Shlomo HaMelech, King Shlomo says, Yoter Sheyach Kohelet Chacham, not only was Kohelet teacher wise, but he was also successful to teach knowledge to the people. So to research it is one aspect, and to teach it, to bring it to practice to the people, is a special challenge which I think has new aspects in it. The Gemara explained, then he prepared for Zaynabah, he made it approachable, accessible. And I think that is a challenge, I feel, to bring these values and knowledge to people. I think that is a really special challenge, how to teach it and to bring it in an interesting way. What I tried to do 3 years ago, to prepare a website, and it's not yet ready, it's far away from being ready. And I structured it in a way that it is on one hand. The background is like ABC, what we saw before. But what is the history of Jewish ethics? The history of sources of the people that are familiar with that to get to the third one. The history of Jewish doctors. The commitment. The second part is the physician, the patient, diseases. Issues surrounding these questions, and the last topic is C, is lifespan. And I try to organize different topics according to these entries, to these general topics, and I think that will cover in 28 topics a lot of the material. Of course, there's always more to be added, there are more issues, but I think that gives a very good coverage of the field. And actually what I'm doing during the conference here, I will present one of the aspects, how to teach, what is the peak of it. Tomorrow I would like to present something on Rambam, who was like an image of a rabbi, philosopher, and physician, who incorporated all the peaks in one light. We'll talk about the Rashuta of Hela Apostle, the commission of duty to healing, and I will talk about the issue of euthanasia, which is each topic from another field of the website. I think it is extremely important to give a systematic and historical overview of the sources. And at the bird's eye, you see here that the sources come from the Bible to the Poskim in our generation. I think there's no tradition in the world which goes back 2,500 years. And the Pasuk in the Bible is relevant in the same way as the Mishnah, the Malach, and later on, all are on our table to be respected as a legal contribution to the public for the modern halakha. Interestingly, that the notion of halakha was explained by Rabbi Nathan Mirona and Tzipria in the 13th century. Halakha, the law, is called halakha because the Torah, halakha, mehav sinai to our days. It goes, it flows. And to show this continuity, I think it's a totally new challenge of our tradition compared to other traditions where every century has new aspects and you can get a better previous one. Here's a continuity which makes it longer, more interesting, and more solid. As Professor Steinberg showed before, in the Israeli law, that is a very interesting challenge for physicians, and I think really it's relevant for all physicians, whether they are religious or not, to show the background of these values. I would like to give you now a case from four different topics and to show how interesting these aspects are. And they could not only help us to understand clinical questions, but they can actually bring us back to the classical sources that we will be surprised, I was surprised, that things that I did not pay attention to, that I was thinking about clinical questions, I found in the sources very useful around this. And I took from different topics a short collection of these four topics. The basic foundation of medical ethics are presented in two basic philosophical theories of ethics. One is the aspect of physiology, what is good at the end of the day, what comes out of it, what is the benefit. That's one aspect. And the other aspect is the view of how we deals the obligation, what is our commitment to do. Goes back to the philosophy of non-way. And there is a lot of discussions which foundational ethics is relevant for many questions. And most people believe that there's a combination of the modification of both theories, one first one and sometimes the second. When I learned about these theories first, it was just this Pasha Peshavua. And I found the pursuit in our Pasha Peshavua, which I was not capable to pay attention to it before I saw these theories. And I was surprised to see that the Torah sees exactly these two components, one's A and one's B and one's only B. And I talked about the famous Vasita, Hayashalda, Hope, and Hashem. You should do the right and the good to the eyes of Hashem. Sometimes it says, you should do the good and the right. And I will not go into details now, but it works very nicely. In another place it says, if there are people transgression of different values, they have to be killed. You should do the right by punishing them. You will do the right in the eyes of Hashem. It does not say you should do the good, because it's never good to punish someone. So we have here a beautiful example, for me at least. I did not pay attention, and interesting, I couldn't find it in the Poshim. Somebody paid attention to these tiny differences between Yashar Tov, Tov Yashar, and sometimes only Yashar. And that's actually the application of the two basic philosophical theories and ethics of theology or theology. So that is a nice example that we can learn from these theories to understand the Parshat Shavua in a better, deeper way, what is Yashav, what is Tov, and when one comes before the other or alone. Here I would like to show you, for me, a very interesting Parshat and a comparison to law. We talked about the second topic, the self-endangerment, to which extent does somebody have to endanger himself to save his fellow man. And the famous Malan Bab Mestia says two persons are traveling in the desert and there is not enough water for each of them. Who is allowed to drink it? The owner of the bottle, or do we have to divide it equally between both will die? And the Gemara says at the end of the Akiva, your brother shall live with you. If you are allowed to take care of you first. Of the Akiva who says you should love your neighbor, your fellow man. Still he says, you come first, if not both can survive. This Gemara exactly is known In the Roman law, and that idea is interesting to compare not only to the God and to the Sponsa, but also to go back to generals, the historical sources at the same time exactly. And Cicero, in his writing exactly the same time, might be even 100 years earlier, he says, if a shipwreck, two equally wise men grab the same board to rescue themselves, and the board cannot carry both of them, whose life is worth the least should die, and the life of the more worthy man should be rescued. That's a very interesting comparison to better understand the Jewish halakha, the Gemara, as compared to the Roman law. And as explained by Sean in his paper in 1945, Shnayim Shehayu Orchim Bamidbar, he said that is the basic concept of life to be worthy. He wrote that in 45, just after the Holocaust, and comparing that to the issue that I have to decide, am I more important or is the other guy more important? If I'm less important, I have to die. If he's less important, the importance is more important. What is the worth of life? This comparison actually points out very nicely values of Jewish life. The holiness of everybody is allowed to take care of himself. If he can help somebody else, of course he has the obligation to do so. But there is never ever a selection between life worthy to be lived and life unworthy. This comparison, I think, is the most interesting insight, not only to learn the Jewish sources and their development, but also to see it in the context of other provisions. Interesting, of course, that in the Roman law it is a shipwreck because they were traveling on the sea, and in the Gemara it is between Babi and Eretz Yisrael, it is the desert. Professor Steinberg mentioned before the famous Tshuva by Rabbaz. Directly from this Gemara, we learn about organ donation. If somebody has been endangering himself, to donate a kidney to save somebody else. And the Torah says, the Lachet of the Imam, before the human God, the Holy Mother, Shalom, the Tzarich, which the day for a favor, she must need a set of the Sarah, the famous rule mentioned before, the laws of the Torah must be in keeping with rational reasoning and logic. And from this Tshuva, issues for organ donation, including the whole policy about it, are discussed by this Tshuva going back to the 16th century, and later on in response, I think it's the most interesting flow of the sources during the century. The third topic I would like to approach, and I've just picked up some interesting sources to give a taste of them, regarding the status of the fetus, the Mishnah Oroch says, if the woman is giving birth and she is in danger, and the fetus is actually in danger because the process of delivery is blocked, you have to perform embryotomy. Because her life, the mother, precedes the life of the baby. If the head is born, it's delivered. The birth you're not allowed to touch the baby at that stage anymore, because his nefesh and the nefesh of the mother, none of them should be rejected. Don't interfere at that stage. Why does the beginning say chayeha and at the end say nefesh? And I think for me it was the same experience only when I started to think about the practical questions of abortion. I learned to pay attention that it says at the beginning chayim and later on it says nefesh. For a very simple reason, chayim and nefesh is not the same. Biologically, the fetus is certainly the biological unit. And there's life. You can hear it, you can see it, the mother can feel it. It is life. But nefesh, with all the rights of the nefesh, of the nefesh, the baby acquires only after life. And that is pointed out very clearly by Rashi, who says that kol zman shelo yatzal avim haolam lav nefesh. Since it is not a nefesh until it is born, it is only chayim. It is a biological unit, but it doesn't have the same right as a nefesh. And interesting that at the time of Rashi, in Europe, there was a question about the settlement. When does really life start? There's a big difference between the Jewish and the Christian tradition. The Jewish law is very, very clear at that point. I would like now to show you another interesting insight where we can learn from the Jewish sources dealing with these issues. Very interesting concept that I saw. And Rabbi Ishmael, who certainly was one of the biggest scholars of the Mishnah, has a very strange explanation on one of the Supreme Parshat Noach, the seven Noachai laws, where it says you're not allowed to kill anybody. Shofech tam ha'adam, ba'adam tamoy shofech. Whoever kills another man, his man has his blood as he can kill. The beautiful chiastic order in the text of the Bible. ABC, CBA. Shofech tam ha'adam, ba'adam tamoy shofech. And the Bible is very enthusiastic because man is created from the image of God, and everybody who destroys that has to be punished. Rabbi Ishmael has an interesting explanation, and he says, I read this pasuk differently. Shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam, damo yishafech. Whoever kills a man, a human being, in the human being, he has to be punished. He is also a fetus. And that is, as I just pointed out before from the source, is not in keeping at all with the Jewish tradition. Life starts with birth. Not if you are allowed to kill the fetus, but there are no human rights, no full human rights before birth. So what is he doing on Mishnah? He didn't understand either. He should take it to power. He should learn that the pasuk says, Shofech dam ha'adam, v'adam damo yishafech, so beautifully phrased that no point to misunderstand that. Why didn't he explain Shofech dam ha'adam is not according to the text, not according to the Talmud Mishnah? It's not according to the Jewish law. It's really not, that's not what the Bible says. So he comes to a very strange situation. The Kabbalah asks, is it possible that for Noachi, the main law, it is not allowed to perform abortion because the baby, the fetus, is Adam Ba'adam? But for a Jewish doctor, it would be allowed. Is that possible that Dr. Levy is not allowed to do that? He is allowed to do that, and a non-Jewish doctor, where it is forbidden to perform the abortion? It is a total strange situation. I was wondering about that Gemara for years. There's an interesting paper by Upchovitz many years ago. And I think they have an interesting insight which we can learn from this pursuit, which goes much further, very relevant for Spencer research, that Rabbi Ishmael understood very well the Gemara and the pursuit and all the details. But he had a mission. He said, in a totally different place, that's the approach, before I explain it. You see, that's one of the earliest pictures of the homunculus, the little man, Adam Ba'adam. Adam Ba'adam is the notion in the Gemara, but in the 19th century, when they just discovered the microscope, and the Christian theory is that life begins with very early on, and they saw in the microscope that the sperm, they see a little man. You see it here? Exactly that's the way you see the thumbnail, and you see a little baby in the sperm. Because that was their understanding, they saw it this way in the microscope. So that is a totally, that's not the Jewish approach, that from that stage it is life. What is the answer for that? It's a very interesting approach by Rabbi Ishmael. Rabbi Ishmael heard that Cleopatra, Malkat Alexandria, Cleopatra, the queen of Alexandria, her slaves were punished to death by the Malkut, by the king. Who is the king who punished them to death? It is Cleopatra herself. She punished them to death because she wanted to see how a baby looks, how the fetus, how they look like. So she performed experimentation, human experimentation, and killed fetus. in order to have to see how Ephesus at different stages looks like. In Alexandria, in Egypt, were famous schools of research and medical research at that time. And the Gemara says that in that there they did research. Of Ishmael said to this Gemara, you bring me a proof. I have proof from the Torah, and you bring me a proof from there, from Alexandria. So he probably had in mind that, yes, I know, he's probably allowed to do that. But since there is a lot of abuse, and since there is a slippery slope, that yes, it is allowed, but you are going to kill human beings in order to see what's going on with the fetus. Rabbi Ishmael had the very deep insight. It is theoretically allowed, but since there is an abuse, you're not allowed to do that. And he rephrased the Shofet Dam Adam Vadam, Shofet Dam Adam Vadam Vadam Shofet, in order to protect human life for non-Jewish abuse. And I think that is the most interesting insight of the responsibility had and the vision that even though from the Torah it might be allowed, but you're not allowed to abuse it. That is a posek that has a good vision. And we know from one Gemara to the other that Rabbi Ishmael, he knows that it's directly allowed, but since in Alexandria it was abused, he said, for you it's not allowed. And therefore this situation created, I think we can learn from these issues, most essential rules of Jewish tradition and the Yimut Torah. In our week's parasha, that's the last example, in our week's parasha, we learn that if a person is sentenced to death, you're not allowed to leave to eat his body on the tree. If he's the enemy or if he's sentenced to death, you should bury him the same day. I trained in Basel in the building of the medical school called the Bezalgamo, named after the famous Andreas Cesar. If you see his wonderful seven books, they look all like that. He had people like that, and they are hanging here. They were killed. And he used these dead people sentenced to death as material to study them for his anatomical descriptions and pictures. Obviously, in Basel at that time, they had the understanding if somebody is sentenced to death, do with him, with his body, whatever you like. No obligation, there is no image of God. The Torah says, even if a person, that is the source of Gula, even if a person has to be killed because he performed terrible things, and he had to be killed, still he is an image of God. He kidalat Elohim Talumi, and he is like the twin brother of God, and never ever treat him without respect. So here you see a very strong contrast between what Nizal did in Switzerland for his anatomical research. He got all the material from these people who were killed, and the Torah said never ever you have to respect him as an image of God and bury him the same day. Interesting, as pointed out by Yakubovich 50 years ago, on this pasuk, there is a machloket haposkim between Rashba and the Pope. The Pope says you are not allowed. Since the pasuk says you have to bury him right away, there is a prohibition to prepare bodies who died in Italy in order to bury them in their home country at home. No permission of postmortem at all. And the Rashba said, if it is in honor, based on the law of the Sanhedrin, if it's in honor of the person who died that you want to bring him back to his family and to bury him there, you don't have to bury him the very same day. Go and feel second. And not one is just written in the text, has to bury the same day. The Pope, his child, was, I hope, he has to be buried the same day. Not keeping in mind what the idea is to respect him. The Rashba and Gemara says, he's a little dog, you're allowed to bring him home. So you see here how wonderful it is to compare, and sometimes not only different poskim, but also to take it from different sources. The halakha on this issue, of course, in the state of Israel, changed significantly of performing post-mortem, pointed out by Sfari and Ashkenazi, Poskim, Yassi, the Sibayesh. In the state of Israel, since we have our own universities and our own research, we have to use the own bodies for research and to find a solution to use the own bodies for research if necessary. And certainly, if it is necessary for transplantation, dead body has another context that it can take other lives, and therefore this pasuk in Parshat Shavua has actually a new situation, also in the state of Israel and also for transplantation surgery. So to summarize after these four examples, I think that we can learn a lot, very interesting material, not only physicians and not only people strongly interested in that, I think it's actually a great syllabus for everybody interested in Jewish studies. To learn in a very systematic way, to understand concepts, to understand the sources from the Bible during all the centuries, and we can learn by that the malicious slave of well, a certain tradition which is from the classical sources, classical medicine, which is an outstanding challenge. I think every doctor, nurse, and everybody interested in the field could learn from that the tremendous values. My dream is to prepare a website, to have like 30 or 60 hours there, different topics, to cover it with course marks that people can study carefully, get credits, and to support it by everything necessary for modern teaching, like the online baby blush for medicine, Jewish sources in many countries, and this way it can be attractive not only for physicians but also for the population at large. Thank you very much for your attention. I'll be happy to hear your comments.
With the addition of tourism. for directions, that you can come to Switzerland, even not as a Swiss citizen, and get this type of treatment, whereas in Holland or in Belgium, you have to be a citizen, and have the privilege to be free. There were some other countries that tried it, came in their process, and abandoned it. In Oregon, and recently in the state of Washington, they allow physician-assisted suicide, which means that the physician is not really injecting the lethal dose, but he is prescribing to the patient the lethal dose of medication, and the patient commits suicide with his directions and advice. So it's maybe one step less, but conceptually it's very similar, although it has some advantages. Most of Western countries do not allow either active euthanasia or physician-assisted suicide. However, in most countries, there's an ongoing debate whether to allow it or not. It is true that in England recently it came up again. I think the one that raised it was Lord Neely. Sometimes these are the ones that are those who promote things. He proposed it in the House of Lords, and it raised a big debate in England. The medical establishment in England is opposed to active euthanasia, and it is not uncommon that those who have to do it are opposed to it. The philosophers who sit in a room and philosophize, they come out with ideas that the patient do it. And I can just relate to you a story about the issue of Israel, where we try to formalize the law with the dying patient. As I'll show it, I don't want to take the time to say it twice, but in essence, the Israeli law, according to Halakha, allows to withhold certain treatment, but not to withdraw. Especially, it has to do with respirators. So, in certain circumstances which were discussed, one is allowed not to be put on a respirator and die naturally. But once the respirator, to withdraw it as an act is halachically considered a killing act, an act of euthanasia. So that is forbidden in Israeli law. This act is acceptable in most Western societies, including Canada and the United States, because they differentiate between the Dutch act of euthanasia, which is using material that is not a treatment, it's outside of the realm of treatment, it is directed at killing, as compared to treatment device, such as a respirator, that you can take it away, and that is not called killing the patient, because you don't intend to kill the patient. The patient would die necessarily by this act, but you don't intend it, and it's a form of treatment, therefore you're allowed to take it away. Very difficult to understand the philosophy behind it, but that is how it goes. Now, in England, those who are now for active euthanasia are in the way to do like in Holland, but at the moment it is opposed. And as I said, physicians mainly are those who oppose it. So when I came to the Knesset and I presented the consensus of the committee that I shared to enact the law in such a way that withholding certain treatments would be allowed but withdrawing now. So one of the members of the Knesset said, why should we be different here in the United States? We are the 51st state of the United States anyway, and we do what they do, and if they say it's okay, why shouldn't we say it's okay? So I told her, you know what? I have a very simple suggestion. I invite you to come to calisthenics, to intensive care unit, every morning, and put the flaps on all the patients there. You don't need an ND for that. It's a very simple technical issue. You can do it the same way as I can do it. said, but how will I sleep at night if I'll do it? So that shows that to say it as a philosophy is one thing, to do it is another thing. And I think England is a very good example to show that those in the parliament and the philosophers are really for the Dutch procedure, but the positions, at least at the moment, the DNJ is opposed to it. I don't know how long it will hold, but that is true that it's an ongoing debate, but it's not the only country. The second question was, how does subdue the earth go with ethics? Now, what was this birth, when was this verse said? It was said to Adam HaRishon. God told them, conquer the earth and subdue it. We understand today to conquer something is to conquer it from someone. If I have a piece of land and an enemy comes and wants to take this piece of land from me, he conquers the piece of land. Adam HaRishon was the only man. So what type of conquer the earth is there? Who would conquer from him? He is the only master of the earth at that time. So says the Ramban that the interpretation there is different. It is not to take it from one to the other, it is to conquer the earth itself, which means to work it, to change it, to plow it, to make it work for human utility. And that is the essence of the partnership between the human being and God. God created the earth in a certain way, but he actually commanded Adam HaRishon to work it, to change it, to do something to it that would be better than God himself did it. Because God prepared everything for human beings to continue. And the same holds true for every act that we do in order to better the situation of human beings.
Okay, thank you very much. Yes, yeah. Okay, one last question, and then Mark. Now that we're going to start.
I'm interested in Robert's comments on, I don't know if it has to be measured with the hospice system in the United States. It's been very fashionable for parents to decide that it's time to withdraw care on a patient who has potentially, granted very sick, potentially still curable. All of a sudden, the hospice gets involved, shipped out of the hospital, and within 2-3 days later, the patient died. So, I'm sure, quote, they're just keeping the patient comfortable. What's the difference between that and the doctor just actively administering? It's a question over time if the drug accumulates as opposed to being offline.
Well, once again, to go into details of what is allowed and not allowed to do with titration will take away from another lecture, but in essence, hospice can, there are different types of hospice and different policies to hospice. There are hospices which are intended to let the patient die comfortably by all means, including withholding food and fluid, for instance, because giving him food and fluid prolongs his existence, and since he's suffering, it prolongs his suffering. It can also mean to withdraw treatments that were given up to now that kept the patient alive, and by withdrawing it, let the patient die. It can mean terminal sedation, which is injecting sedative drugs, which actually kill the patient, with the intention to make him comfortable, but with the amounts and the doses which actually kill the patient. All these acts, if this is the philosophy of the hospice, are forbidden, halakhically, and are forbidden in Israel, as consequence of this law. But the concept of hospice as such is a very good concept. We are obligated to make the patient as comfortable as possible as part of the treatment of the dying situation. There are several responses by Karen Kosky that even if the drug that will make the patient comfortable may hasten death, provided it is not necessarily hasten death, it not a siklesha. If it's not a siklesha, then it is obligated to treat the patient because, as from Don Lerbach explained it, treating pain and suffering in end of life situation is equal to treating a brain tumor or lung tumor where you're allowed to take risks. And if a patient has a brain tumor, the treatment is to evacuate this tumor, but there might be a 10% mortality due to the procedure. Yet the procedure is permissible. If it is 100% mortality, then it's not allowed, then it's a situation. But if you do it in a way that mostly will be beneficial, but there are side effects, then it's a permissible treatment. All our treatments are permissible. Says the Prophet, the same holds true for pain and suffering, especially in terminal conditions. This is the brain tumor, this is the lung tumor of this patient. And the treatment is morphine. And if you give him morphine in an amount which really ameliorates pain and suffering, and in most instances doesn't kill him, then it's required, not only for this. And that can be done, obviously. It's done effectively by palliative care of the people, who most of them are opposed to euthanasia. Their concept is to make the patient comfortable, but not to kill him. And this type of hospice is a very good type, and that is what is done.
Okay, thank you very much. So then Dr. Benny, Dr. Steinberg, and we'll come tomorrow now upstairs for those more that just to go to our left upstairs to the end of the hall. Just we'll reiterate tomorrow morning, Dr. Yomi at 6:45 in school. Shopping for show channel will show party and all that kind of stuff. Maybe at this time of year. Tomorrow at 7:30 is Shakri. The practice will be open at 8:15. They'll look at their later. I presume we're going to start on time tomorrow. Now we have a little bit of leeway, but we have the past schedule tomorrow from 9 to 1. The afternoon is off. 5:15, we'll have the Shir Dr. Benny will give the Shir in here. All the sessions will be in here, except on Shabbos, but all the time will be in the